You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your DFS preview for this week's Honda Classic, going tier by tier to break down the board. Joining me to do just that, Sia Najad is here. Sia, welcome, my friend. How did you enjoy the cams in contention at Roar Vieira?
Boy, is that so golf that the all cam lineup ended up being just lights out. Everybody makes it through the cut. I don't have a narrative lineup yet, which is super disappointing. I'm disappointed in myself. But hopefully, like, as we go through this show, maybe we'll come up with one. Because clearly, if you come up with a narrative lineup, it's going to win.
Clearly. We've learned that firsthand here. Greg Ducharme is here. Greg, first of all, not only welcome to the DFS preview that we do every Monday, but you guys over at Course Record are absolutely just doing it right now. I cannot wait for tonight's episode. Tell me about it.
Tonight's episode is going to be quite good. Now, this was a great week for the PGA Tour. It was a huge success, and we definitely talked a little bit about that. We had a chance to catch up with Alan Shipnuck as well, and he had some very interesting things to say about his conversation with Phil, which is in his book. And I'll tell you, when we taped this, I wasn't sure what I was going to get. And I do, while I'm on in that show, I'm on the air for some of the segments, but I kind of produce it as well. And so work on all the things. And in that interview, I'm keeping time and I'm looking at the clock and we're about 3 minutes in and he's a little on the short side with some of his answers. And I'm like, okay, well, if we can get to 6 minutes here, well, you know, one more really good question in, we'll have a good interview and we can react to it a little bit in the second half if we need to. And then he just starts launching into some really, really juicy stuff. And I was wide-eyed for the rest of the interview. It ends up going about 13 minutes, and you don't want to miss it. So that's tonight at 8:30 on CBS Sports Network, the show. He's in the second block, so probably about 8:45, he'll be in there. And it was you don't want to miss it. He was very open and honest, gave some interesting perspective. So I think you'll really like it. But I'm just, as for tonight, Rick and Sia, I'm just hoping to get close to Sia's fire right now. See, I mean, we got we got TPC/KH Lee the week before. He was maybe the first round leader. And then we have the all cam lineup last week. I can't wait. I'm a little disappointed here. There's no narrative lineup yet, but I'm sure we'll come up with one by the end of the show.
Yeah, we got like 55 more minutes. We'll be just fine before we have to get to that point. One big news. How about this? Alert, alert, pay attention. If you're listening at home or at work, I don't care where you're listening. Actually, listen at work. Do it on somebody else's dime. Big news. You're now in our one and done. Yeah, how about this? So, gentlemen, we are opening up a fan spot into our one and done. And we are starting them with $1 million. And each and every week, there is going to be a form that they can choose from one of, say, 10 options. That form right now for the Honda Classic is in the description below. You can get involved right now. And we're going to keep track of the earnings for the fans. Now, Sia, I hate to admit this, giving them $1 million is getting them dangerously close to your season-long total.
It totally is. No, it totally is. I have not done a great job. I've also kind of taken some middling guys. I haven't really swung for the fences with guys like Patrick Cantlay, for example. But we'll see what happens. You know, I'm playing it a little conservative so far. Taylor Gooch really let me down last week, like so many others in DFS. I will say this. I think the fans, if we're going to base this on last year and Coach getting in late, it's got to be $1 million and Sepp Straka. I feel like the first guy out of the gates is Sepp is in this tournament, right?
He is, yeah.
I'm just saying.
All right, maybe we'll have to give him Sepp Straka. But listen, this idea came up from, it was either a live chat or something last week, Greg, and you know, Jacob and I were kind of looking at one another, and we were like, oh man, another thing for us to do. I don't know. It would be so cool, but how are we going to pull this off? Well, shout out, Elijah. Elijah Weichers is taking care of this whole thing for us, Greg. He's setting up the form. He's making sure the information gets accurately and quickly and efficiently over to Jacob so that we have it for the Tuesday show so that we can announce it on time so that the pick is in. It's blind so that I'm not tainted or Jacob doesn't know what the results are going to be. I mean, we've got the best fans. Elijah's pulling it off. It's awesome. I'm excited about this.
Well, first of all, thank you, Elijah. Second of all, I wish you the best of luck. I like that this is going to be a thing now. Next year, we can get you in, get the fans in full time right from the get-go. This is a great way to start, get your feet wet, and understand how utterly competitive this league really is. And at times, how frustrating it is. Jacob?
I just got to say, setting the precedent based off of Coach last year, next week, or next year, the fans are actually going to have to be the commissioners. Of the
They're going to have to run the whole thing.
Yes. Boy, is that dangerous.
Yeah, we better be careful about precedent moving forward. Wow. Yeah, so an exciting week. We will actually have, so we'll have that live of the fan pick live on Tuesday when we release all the other one and done selections. So welcome to the competition. It is now officially on Honda Classic time. Sia Najad, this is an event, or more specifically, a course, PGA National, that essentially is one of the most difficult courses that we get on the PGA Tour, and certainly one of the more difficult non-major courses. I'm showing my screen right now, rickrungood.com, and this course, last year, Sia played a shot, a little bit more than a shot over par for the scoring average. This is going to be a true test, and if the wind starts whipping, oh boy, look out.
Yeah. Speaking of, you know, normally I have a good check on the wind, you know, this early, but I actually don't know. I don't know if you guys have any insight on what the report is. I know we're, you know, 3, 4, 5 days out of some of these rounds, but yeah, this is, you know, so last week we thought it was going to be tough too. Right. And, you know, a lot of guys really just kind of crushed the course. I mean, namely like a few of them, but really overall, it was a much easier test last week. I think this week is definitely going to be a different story. Like, bring an extra sleeve of balls because, you know, you're going to be landing in the water here and there. And it's going to be very frustrating because you're going to have a guy that's just cruising along. And then all of a sudden, you know, one hole just trips him up. And then, you know, you're looking at a potential miscut. So yeah, as far as the water is concerned and the hazards and all of the bunkers in play here, you know, for me, I'm definitely looking for ball strikers. I'm looking for a little bit more off the tee, I think, than maybe some other people are. I'd love to get your opinion on that. I see the tee to green numbers on your chart here at rickrungood.com. Obviously, that's going to be highly correlated. I think around the green game is definitely in there because of the wind and because of just, you know, how difficult the test is to get it on the green at greens in regulation. But yeah, I'm definitely just so you guys know, and I'd love your opinion on this, I'm looking for a little bit more off the tee, but basically to simplify it, tee to green all around game for sure.
15 different holes with water in play. Greg, it comes into play off the tee, comes into play on approach. There's about a million bunkers, give or take a few. There's just kind of danger everywhere. We've seen big numbers posted. And oh, by the way, then you get to the bear trap, which is 15, 16, 17, one of the most difficult three-hole stretches on the PGA Tour. But also, Greg, those aren't even the hardest holes on the course, right? There are harder holes on the course. I mean, it is just kind of like smack you around all day long, all week long. Par is going to be a good score more often than not. What are you kind of expecting from the first leg of the Florida Swing?
This is a course I've had the chance to play, PGA National, and it is challenging. But it's not challenging in the way some of the other courses are. It's not a big, long golf course. You don't have to hit driver everywhere. It's really a positional golf course, and it's tricky. So you have to avoid, well, I'll say it's really tricky to play aggressive because there is danger lurking all over the place. And you have to be very cautious. You have to control the wind. And then again, there are some shots. I think the reason 15, 16, and 17 are so scary, even though they're not necessarily the most difficult on the course, is there's not really any bailout. There's not a good option. You look at some golf courses, and Augusta National is one of them, where Webb Simpson's talked about there's a way to play every hole. And if you understand where to hit the ball, you can make the golf course really quite easy. I mean, it's not necessarily easy to make birdies and shoot really good scores, but it's easy to avoid mistakes. Well, this is one where it's a little more challenging to do that. You think of the greens at both 15 and 17, and where you see water on the right-hand side, and you want to avoid the water on the right-hand side, but left isn't really much better because the greens are so fast and the bunkers are over there, and you get some downhill lies to a green that runs away that's very fast towards the water. And it's not a safe bailout. It's not the ideal strategy, so to speak. So it becomes very difficult. And see, I agree with you on driving. I think driving accuracy is a premium. And partly because it's a sign that you're in control of your golf ball. And then the other thing I find interesting is I'm not necessarily looking at just strokes gain approach when it comes to iron play. I think greens of regulation is an important number too. Like a Billy Horschel I was looking at earlier today, he doesn't necessarily gain a lot of strokes approaching the green, but he hits a lot of greens of regulation. And that speaks to a conservative style approaching the greens. And I think that can really work out here. You don't typically get winning scores near 20 under. They tend to be in the low double digits or high single digits, even depending on weather. And I think you'll get into double digits this week. You're looking at winds out of the Thursdays out of the east southeast, 14 miles an hour. You got 10 out of the southeast on Friday, an east wind of 10 miles an hour on Saturday, and a south-southeast wind of 8 miles an hour on Sunday. So that's also the lighter direction. When the wind comes out of the north, it can be really heavy wind, and it can be quite nasty. But this is a lighter wind, so I think you're going to see some really, really nice-looking weather. In the afternoons, those numbers can get higher. It can definitely pick up, so that's not locked in stone, but the direction of that wind definitely tells me something. It should be a much a calmer breeze than we've seen in the past.
Yeah, well, all of our media friends and partners who get out there on Monday and Tuesday after the event, they're in trouble, Greg. They're going to get that north wind 15, 16, 17 miles an hour. So if forecast stays like that, the pros will be fine. The amateurs might be struggling. Sia, let's look at the field. Let's talk about the field. Joaquin Niemann back at it again after winning the Genesis Invitational last week. We've got a couple of names like Brooks Koepka, the top Sung JM, obviously back again. It's clearly not as strong of a field as we saw at Riviera, although many tournaments are not. But I think it's low-key kind of interesting. This is an opportunity where we've seen guys at 100 to 1, 200 to 1, 300 to 1 find victory here. So I think there's going to be a lot of different golfers with a chance.
Yeah, I think especially when you look at the field. I mean, when you look at the top, okay, let's go to Brooks Koepka, for example. Below Brooks Koepka, I think you can really make an argument, if you're not looking at the price ranges, I think you can make an argument that there's a lot of these guys that are kind of in the same bucket, if you will. And so what that means to me, and by the way, in that bucket isn't really talent ridden, at least relative to the tournament we had last week and most of the tournaments we have on the schedule. So to me, what that means is there are guys in this low end range, maybe some of the newer Korn Ferry Tour graduates, that there are some of these guys that are really in play. You wouldn't necessarily consider them in a loaded field, but in this field, as hard as this test is, you have to measure the test in terms of like the, you know, a newer player's experience, for example, but you also have to measure them against the talent that is actually here. So I think there are, to your point, I think there are a lot of guys in play from a DFS standpoint.
All right, well, let's not waste any more time. Let's get into the DFS board, but first we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partner.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
And we're back. Here is the cheat sheet, and I count 5 golfers over $10,000 led by Sung Jae-im, who won this event in 2020. He's a flat $11,000. Liu Yu stays in his 10-8. Joaquin Neiman is 10-6. Daniel Berger is 10-4. And Brooks Koepka, $10,100. Greg, it's small. 5 golfers, 5 interesting golfers. How do we start to separate one from another?
Man, I have a really hard time looking away from Sung Jae-im. I mean, you go down the rest of the board, you have Louis Oosthuizen, who hasn't played a whole lot this year, so I have my questions about him for that reason. Joaquin Neiman is out by rule because he won last week, even though his game seems to fit. Daniel Berger, we have the question about his back. I don't know what to do about that. And then Brooks Koepka, who has been a model of inconsistency. So Sung Jae-im is really the only guy in this top player pool that I like, that I am very confident in, and maybe one of the few players in the field in total, probably the most confident with him than anybody else in the whole field. There's a reason why he's priced the way he is. He's gained strokes. Sia was talking about how off the tee is important, and I agree with that. He's gained strokes off the tee in every event since the John Deere Classic. The John Deere Classic.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
That was in July.
Right. I mean, he has been extremely impressive off the tee. I think that's a great sign. And then at this event, he's had great success as well. He's played here 3 times, a T8, a win, and a T51. So there is very little about Sung Jae-im that I don't like this week. He's putted well the last 2 weeks. He's gained strokes in both of those, at least 3 strokes in both of those, which is great. And we know he can be a great iron player too, although that has been a little bit hit or miss of late. So Sung Jae-im is definitely my horse in this 10K plus range.
Yeah, Greg mentioned the success around PGA National. Of all the players in this field, sorted by strokes gained total at PGA National alone, Sung Jae-im is gaining 2.04 strokes per round. It's the most of anybody with at least 10 rounds. Tommy Fleetwood is actually the only guy better, but he's got 8 rounds under his belt, a fourth and a third. Okay, Sia. I agree. It is hard to say that objectively Sung Jae-im is not the best play here in the moment, but there's other directions we can go. Not everybody's going to play Sung Jae-im. Do you have another direction you would like to take us in?
The only other guy I'm really interested in here, I mean, I don't mind playing the unknown with Daniel Berger. I think that's something I'm going to have to consider a little bit more deliberately as the week goes. I might have to listen to what Daniel Berger says, maybe the day before I actually put him in lineups. But for me, the only two at the top I like are Sung Jae-im and, of course, Louis Oosthuizen. And I just think I was really impressed with Louis when he came to the Waste Management and had a really good showing. I believe he finished 14th in that tournament. And if you just look at his metrics, you know, obviously he hasn't played a ton, but we kind of know who Louis Oosthuizen is. We know he can get really hot with the putter. We know he's generally a good ball striker. He's going to rate out top 10 in this field, tee to green, last 24 rounds. But probably if you go back even further, he'll rate out pretty well regardless. He's good on approach. He's good off the tee. If we're looking at the proximity buckets of, like, let's say 150 to 200, he rates out pretty well there too. I don't really see, you know, especially on a course where I'm really worried about, like, a guy like, let's say, Brooks Koepka, like, just kind of blowing up, just having a few really bad holes and just taking himself out of the tournament. I don't have that worry as much with Louis and Sung Jae. And I understand that can be interpreted as, oh, I'm just playing it safe. But both those guys have win equity, so I'm perfectly fine paying up for either one of those guys.
Yeah, we saw Louis Oosthuizen for the first time in basically 3 months, and he looked like classic Louis, gained strokes across the board, putted very, very well, which probably leaves Brooks Koepka, Greg, and maybe even Daniel Berger as kind of the X factors here, right? I don't know what version we're going to get of Brooks? Is it the T3 at the Phoenix? Is it the miscut at the Farmers and the Genesis? Is it a guy who's kind of in his own backyard or close enough to it, who has a runner-up finish at this event? Like, what are we going to get from Brooks, and why is he so difficult to handicap?
Well, because we don't know what we're going to get from him. This could go either way. He could win the thing and he could miss the cut, and I wouldn't be surprised by either of them. So maybe there's some attractiveness to that. His win equity is probably higher than anybody else's in the field. He plays hard golf course as well. This is a home game for him, and he seems to be a little more interested this year. It hasn't necessarily panned out the way I would have expected, given his comments and given the work he's put in, but that doesn't mean that it won't at some point. So I think looking at what he's done so far this year, the waste management is a sign of a guy who plays really well at a particular course, who played well at this course again. The Genesis is kind of the same story. He doesn't really play well at Riviera, and so he didn't again. And I don't know how much you can take from that, but there's some things that I like about Brooks here. But there's, the risk factor is very high. The thing that could be intriguing is if that ownership is really low. He is a big name in not a very loaded field. So I wonder, Sia, do you think his ownership's going to be, where do you think that's going to rate out?
I think it's going to be lower than Sungjae and Louis. And I think it'll be low enough to play and be slightly contrarian. I don't know what's going to happen with Daniel Berger, but I definitely see Brooks being probably the second lowest owned in this range. I think, believe it or not, I think Joaquin Neiman might be the lowest owned guy in this range. It might go Sungjae, Louis, Brooks, Berger, and Neiman. That's my guess.
Brooks was about 7% owned at Riviera, about 8% in Phoenix, which is bonkers because Phoenix is a place he's won twice. But remember, yeah, that field was kind of top heavy and loaded, and you know, there was a lot going on there. So, okay. Yeah, I think objectively, Sungjae's the best play. I like kind of basically a pivot to anybody else. I think Kepka's got the highest range of outcomes. Louis probably on the safer side, and Neiman. Yeah, if we find out on Wednesday that Neiman's going to be like the lowest Sia, I'll just play the guy who was the best last week and see how it goes. Played well, obviously.
Yeah. And as much as you think, well, yeah, but you're paying the price for him because, you know, you're paying for that win essentially. But at the same time, I mean, yeah, that's true. But again, there's not a ton of, like, where would you put him if he finished fifth last week? What would his price be if he finished fifth? It would probably be right where Billy Horschel and Tommy Fleetwood are.
Yeah, I mean, it might just be like Berger and Brooks move ahead of him. I mean, I would still prefer Neiman over Fleetwood in that situation. So it's not too far off.
He had played well leading into it. The one thing that I worry about is listening to Joaquin talk about last week, how tiring it was, how the range sessions felt like they took forever, and how, you know, the weekend felt like a month. That's exhausting. And that's my worry. Maybe we get a Scottie Scheffler situation where he plays well the first couple of days, but even Scottie got a little tired. So that's my worry for Joaquin, is that was not just a big win, but it was a heavy emotional toll based on what he said afterwards.
The 9K range is pretty fascinating, although it is small. Tommy Fleetwood, 9,900, then a $300 gap to Billy Horschel at 96. Shane Lowry checks in at 9,400. And then see ya, the bottom of it, Alex Noren, Matthew Wolf, Keith Mitchell, Matt Jones. Matt Jones, our defending champion. So small $9,000 range. I think there are some guys I'm excited about and some guys I'm less excited about. How are you starting to sort this one out?
So there's a couple guys that I think, even though they're priced up, I think are going to end up being pretty chalky. I like them both, but I'll tell you this. I think a lot of builds are going to start with, let's say, Sungjae M or somebody like that, maybe Louis, and then they're going to go down to either Matt Jones or Keith Mitchell. And for good reason, because they've done well here and they're in really good form. And if just from a course fit standpoint, they both really fit. I don't think people are going to be too nervous about paying the price for either of them. So I only say that because to me, that's going to be like a very standard build to grab one guy in the quote elite range and then one guy in the low 9K range, and then just kind of like try to get different from there, or, you know, build your lineup from there below that 9K range. So I like both of those guys. The one guy that I might be taking that would be considered a pivot, even though he might get some rostership because he's been so good here in 2020, third place, 2018, fourth place. At this point, you two already know who I'm talking about. Of course, it's Tommy Fleetwood. Now, the one thing is we haven't really seen Tommy Fleetwood, but we have seen him, you know, overseas at Abu Dhabi and in Dubai. And he wasn't bad. I think he had a 12th place finish in Dubai. And frankly, that was, he could have won that thing. He shot a 75 in round four after having three great rounds in a row. So if not for that, maybe he's a winner out there. But I think that's an inch, like, you know, a classic ball striker. I don't think, to the extent the conditions get, you know, windy or treacherous, I don't really think that's going to phase Tommy Fleetwood. And because I don't think he's going to be in the traditional build, the common build, I kind of like him as a potential pivot.
It is interesting because I think a lot of people have written off Tommy Fleetwood for a while. It hasn't been a good stretch of golf for him in over a year, but we are starting to see some better results. You go back to last year, T7 at the Zozo, T13 in Dubai, T27 at the DP World Tour Championship. That's a stacked field. Then you go to the Abu Dhabi HSBC, he makes the cut there. And then more recently, a T12 in Dubai, as Asiya alluded to, and the T8 in Saudi Arabia. I mean, this is a very good stretch of golf for Tommy Fleetwood, going back to a place he's had a lot of great success. I thought his outright number was too short, but I would prefer him in DFS markets. Greg, when you start to break down this $9,000 range, do you see it similarly to Sia?
Well, first of all, you can win all you want on that European tour, yeah. But to reference Paul Azinger, it's just different here. That was, of course, Tommy Fleetwood when he had a chance to win and hit it in the water on the 18th hole, and right. That's exactly what he said. So I just find that ironic that Tommy has started to play a little bit better on the DP World Tour, and we don't know what we're going to get out of him. So he's a guy that I don't have a ton of trust in. I don't see really sticky course history at this venue, even though he's played well here twice. I don't know if that's enough for me to really get on board. So I have my questions and my doubts. I prefer Billy Horschel to that, who's been playing some great golf.
Yeah.
Accurate driver of the ball, hits a lot of greens of regulation. And he's also a Florida guy, and he's had some success here in the past, a T16, a T4, a T8. He's missed his share of cuts, which is very common. When you look at course history here, you'll see guys with really high finishes and missed cuts. And that's what happens when you get to Florida. But I really like his recent form. And then right below him, so probably I would say my top two guys in this range are probably, well, I'll say three, Horschel, Lowry, and Mitchell. Mitchell, I'm a little disappointed to hear that that's going to be a little chalky, because he's been playing some great golf, and I love what he's said as he's worked on his iron game. He's gotten a little more conservative. He's started to play away from flags more. And I think it's really starting to work. He's starting to turn into a consistent player rather than a popper. And that it speaks to his words. When you play really aggressive and you go at every flag, unless you're a talent like a Victor Hovland or Colin Morikawa, you're going to be inconsistent. And when you're hitting it great, you'll pop. Those guys happen to hit it great every week. But the Keith Mitchells of the world and pretty much everybody else in the world, they don't. So he started to take a more conservative approach. And you're starting to see that pan out in his results. They're getting better and better. And I think that happens to be a perfect fit for this venue. So if you're going to leave ownership out of it, I think Keith Mitchell's the play in this range. And then I also find, would you want to add something on Keith?
I actually wanted to add something on Billy Horschel, because I'm not particularly a Billy Horschel guy, but what we're seeing right now is a lot of really good play. When you start to throw in the match play, you start to throw in the BMW PGA Championship victory, like, his stuff is a lot better than most people want to give him credit for. And you're right, good history around here. I don't say it often. I think it's a Billy Horschel week.
Yeah. I mean, look, he's probably not going to be a one and done play for me, but he definitely could get into some of my DFS lineups. I like where he's priced. It's probably a little high with a Sungjae if you're going to go that way, but he could be a nice option in a world where you pivot. If you play a Brooks Koepka and a Billy Horschel, that could be a dynamic duo. So I really like that. Lowry. So Shane Lowry, I was big on here last year, and he played really well and then just completely fell apart. I'm just going off the top of my head, on either Saturday or Sunday, he had a really tough go of it. But he's played well on the European Tour, on the DP World Tour as well. He's got four straight top 25s over there, a T14 in Saudi Arabia, a T9 at the DP World Tour Championship, and a T12 and a T24 in between that, which was really nice. And we haven't seen him on the PGA Tour since the turn of the calendar year. So I do see some form kind of rounding back into play with him. And at this venue, he's never missed a cut. He also hasn't finished inside the top 21, but all four of his starts have been between tied 53rd and tied 21st. So I like Shane Lowry. I like his game. He's a good short game player and a really good iron player, an underrated iron player, which could go a long way for him this week.
See, two questions here. Would you consider starting your lineups in the $9,000 range? And will you be partaking in Matthew Wolf this week? He's $9,200.
I'll answer the second one first. No, okay. I won't be partaking in Matthew Wolf. Not on this course with all the danger. If I'm going to take a shot at a high-risk guy in that sort of higher price, it'd probably be Brooks Koepka over Matthew Wolf, who I think Brooks will have more ownership than Matthew Wolf, in my opinion. But still, I'd rather just pay up for Brooks rather than I hate to say poor man's Brooks right now, but I just don't see where Matthew Wolf is going to have it for four rounds. You know, he will get it back. I just don't think he gets it back here. I don't think this is the tournament to speculate on whether Matthew Wolf gets it back. As far as the first question goes, I absolutely think you can start in the 9K range. I think you could in this tournament with what we have up top. If you started with Keith Mitchell and Matt Jones, I wouldn't have a huge problem with it. I don't know that I'm going to do that. I think you could also start with like Shane Lowry or Billy Horschel or Tommy Fleetwood if you want to, because there aren't enough guys at the top to be intimidated by starting your lineup in the 9K range. I would prefer to start my lineup with Sung J.M., for example, but will I have lineups starting in the 9K range? Absolutely.
You feel like you're only leaving out last week, if you started in the 9K range, you feel like you're leaving out the five best players in the world. Mm-hmm. This week, you feel like you're leaving out Sung J.M. And it's much easier to take because the other guys beneath him have their risks. And everybody in this range has questions. And it's Florida golf. It leads to volatility and chaos. Mm-hmm. And so for that reason, you feel like you're missing out on one guy. And I'm personally much more comfortable shorting just Sung J.M. than I am last week shorting all five of the best players in the world.
Yeah, I might tinker around with that because I tend to agree with that statement. All right, let's keep on moving. We're going to get down to the eights, the sevens, and the sixes. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we're back. The $8,000 range, Mito Pereira, Patrick Reed, Brian Harman, Cam Young played well last week, Johnny Vegas, Aaron Wise, and then we rounded out with Mackenzie Hughes, Gary Woodland, Russell Knox, and Christian Bezuidenhout. Greg, we'll start here with you. This is where I think things start to get a little bit dicey. I like some stuff here. I'm not sure how much I love anything here.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. The list that I wrote down has, I think, the $9,000 range and Sung J.M. are my most confident plays. And we get here and I start writing question marks after the names. Mito Pereira, for instance, it's like Mito, he could work. He's never played here before. He's by trade a really good ball striker, although he seems to have lost something off the tee ever since the start of the new year.
Yeah.
I have my concerns, but I think that could be a nice fit. The guy I actually really am quite keen on is Brian Harman. Brian Harman played really nice last week. He was tied 14th, or his last start at the Waste Management Phoenix Open. He was tied third at the American Express. So we've seen some pops out of him, but we've started to see a slight uptick in his ball striking ability, which could go a long way. And at this tournament in the past, he has some good form. He's finished tied 11th and tied 12th here. Those are his two best finishes. And again, I'm not huge on course history here, but it's nice to know that they at least have played well here. So he could be an option. Again, not one I love. Another guy that I am somewhat interested in would be a Mackenzie Hughes, who has popped in two of the last 4 weeks. He has a second at the RSM that was on the other side of the calendar year, tied 16th at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. And he's a guy that seems to play hard golf courses really well. Not going to have to make a ton of birdies this week. I think that could play into the game of Mackenzie Hughes.
Finished runner-up to Sungjae Im 2020 was that year. Tried to make a run at him on Sunday. Okay, see ya. Where am I going here? I could go back to Aaron Wise, no problem. I could convince myself to just continue with Cam Young, who's been great. What am I doing here spending my dollars?
Can I ask a question first? Because I have a couple guys I have in mind. But when it comes to Mito Pereira and Gary Woodland specifically, who have not been good off the tee, and that is kind of a trademark of their games, on this particular setup, we do have plenty of situations, right, where we're going to be clubbing down off the tee, some forced layup situations. Does that end up helping guys who have been maybe trouble off the tee with the driver, but maybe because they are in those situations and because they're generally more powerful, that off the tee number actually skews in their direction because of that? Is that crazy talk, or is that actually something that has something behind it?
I'm less familiar with Mito's game as far as the way but with Gary Woodland, he tends to do really well on golf courses like this where he can club down off the tee. He loves hitting that stinger off the tee when he can hit less than driver. And that really benefits him here. He doesn't have to hit driver very much at all. And I think that's why he has such a good record here. He has three top tens, a tied eighth last year, a tied second in 2017, a tied sixth in 2011. So and he's never missed a cut here either. Hopefully that's not the announcer's curse. But he's done well here, and I think that plays a large role in it, Sia, especially if it's windy. He has the ability to flight it low, and he has the power where he doesn't have to hit driver as much, and he can flight it down. That combination can be very, very effective here.
The Mito stuff, Sia, is even just so fascinating because he's like a basically completely different player than what we saw at the end of last year, which is kind of jarring. I think that we're still learning what he's going to end up being. I think I only have 120 rounds on him or something like that in my database, and half of them are one way and half of them are another way. So I think we're still learning, but is that what you were looking for? You kind of thought maybe, hey, less than driver, this gives an opportunity for guys who have maybe not driven it so well to put a long iron in hand, get themselves in play and kind of play it that way.
Yeah, especially a guy like Mito, I agree. Like, I'm not really sure where his game is at overall. I mean, what he's doing with the putter doesn't really seem sustainable versus what he's done really everywhere else. But for a guy like that, who I know has been great off the tee, and a guy like Gary Woodland, who classically is a guy who's great off the tee, it just seems to me that maybe this is a situation to look a little deeper and play a guy like that, even though those off the tee numbers that I value this week don't really look that good. But sort of that aside, a couple of the guys that do have good off the tee numbers, that do have good tee to green numbers, approach, really everything I'm kind of looking for, at least most things I'm looking for. Johnny Vegas is one of them. He rates out really well, especially if you look at the last 24 rounds. He's ninth tee to green. He's fourth off the tee, 16th on approach. Pretty good in sort of the proximities. Not great, but pretty good in some of those proximities, 150 to 200, that a lot of the shots will come from. Driving distance is great if you value that here. Aaron Wise is the other one at 8,400, just below him. This is a high potential guy that a lot of us like to play, but it doesn't actually bear fruit all the time. But, I mean, I can't ignore the metrics. They're pretty good. He does have some weaknesses, but Much like Johnny Vegas, has the around the green weakness, by the way. I don't know how much that's going to come into play here. Aaron Wise has some weaknesses too, but he really rates out pretty well everywhere. And against this field, if there was a tournament for Aaron Wise to flash at, where, and by the way, he has some success here, I think this might be the venue.
Yeah, 13th last year, 35th and 33rd in his other two starts for Aaron Wise. I'm probably down to Wise. I like Vegas because he has that kind of elite skill set. I like Mito just because I think I can trust him. We're still going to learn. But Cam Young, Greg, I mean, Cam Young, it wasn't really just last week. You know, he finished 26th in Phoenix. He finished 20th at Torrey Pines. This is a guy who is seemingly getting more and more comfortable with his name at the top of the leaderboard.
Yeah, he's put himself in position there a lot, which is quite interesting. And you love what he does off the tee. I wonder, he's gaining a lot of strokes off the tee through distance right now.
A ton, yeah.
And that's the big concern for me. Where you look at it, like you were asking about Gary Woodland, he clubs down all the time. And although his driving hasn't been great in all of his starts dating back to 2009, he's only lost strokes off the tee once here. And he lost 0.01 in his first attempt, his first go around here. He's gained strokes off the tee every other event. I'm not sure we're going to get that out of a Cam Young. I love watching him play. I'm not sure this is the venue for him. That being said, his fingerprint is a good driver and a good putter. Maybe you could say a great driver and a very good putter. So he's an interesting case. I'm not really sure what to do with Cam Young, but I'm a huge fan of him as a player. I just worry that he may rely a little too much on distance, and that can get a little dicey here.
Yeah, he's 130th in driving accuracy. He's 140th in greens in regulation, fourth in distance. So that's where the off the tee numbers come from. You do worry about kind of the approach shot a little bit. So yeah, it's a bit of a mixed bag.
He's a little more, at least right now, a little more wild. That comes with his distance, and it comes from a Korn Ferry Tour mindset of having to play really aggressive. When you play mini tours, Korn Ferry Tour, the way he has, it rewards aggressive play. And he's very good at that. But to me, PGA National asks for a more conservative style to be successful. I mean, Sung J.M. would probably say different coming down the stretch. But I have my concerns, but I love Cam Young as a player.
We'll just pencil in Cam Young for the Rocket Mortgage Classic. We'll just give him that trophy right now. That'll be a great spot for him. Yeah. All right. Let's move on down to that $7,000 range and see. Let's just jump right into it. Ryan Palmer is $7,900.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny what you hear about him and the bear trap, but the finishing positions are really good. I mean, he's in pretty good form. I don't mind Ryan Palmer at all at $7,900. I mean, if you look at tee to green, off the tee, you know, all of those kind of major metrics. The approach game has been a little off, but he's really bounced back from a really, really poor, you know, end or entire really 2021 season. So I think Ryan Palmer's a really, you know, high upside play. He's got pretty good experience here. Certainly has miscut equity, but I think he also in this field, I think he has top 10 equity as well.
Yeah, the stat, and I don't have it handy, Sia, maybe you know it. He's got like more balls in the water at the bear trap and maybe this course in total than like anybody else who's ever played it, right? So it's something to that effect.
Right. Yeah. I think that's what it is, except it, and then you measure that up against his finishing positions. It's almost like people think the tournament is played on 15, 16, and 17 and nothing else counts.
Yeah.
It'd be like saying Steph Curry is really bad at three pointers from 23 feet, and that's the stat. Well, how is he at 22 feet, 21 feet, 25 feet, 26 feet, and so on? So I think there's something to be said for Ryan Palmer succeeding on this course in spite of being bad during that stretch.
Yeah, T17, T4, the last two times he's played it, he's got top 40s in basically all but one of the last 10 years, always gaining strokes off the tee. He's been great from tee to green. Yeah. So it's kind of an interesting little nugget that you're going to hear throughout the week, but has still played very well around this golf course. I went immediately to Ryan Palmer at 7,900. Taylor Moore is also there, and Denny McCarthy and Lee Westwood are at the top of this range here, Greg. And it goes all the way down to Doc Redman, Henrik Stenson, Rory Sabatini, Kevin Streelman. Who else in this 7K range would you be comfortable investing your money in?
I wrote down four names.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of options here. So I'm not necessarily married to just these four, but I like Taylor Moore, Lee Westwood, Lucas Glover, Hudson Swafford. Okay. Those are the guys on my list. I'll start with Taylor Moore. He is 34th off the tee so far this year. And he's actually 55th in driving accuracy. He's hitting just about 64% of his fairways, which I like. He's hitting, although he's 172nd in strokes gained approach the green, he's hitting 70% of his greens regulation. So I think that can work well. He's 47th in putting. He's been a really consistent player. And the results have bared that out as well. T21 at the Genesis last week, tied 16th at the AT&T Byron Nelson, tied 8th at the RSM. So I think he's been having a really nice start to his PGA Tour career here. And I've been impressed. So I like that. Lee Westwood, I like probably a little less, but he's finished inside the top 35 in the last three events on the DP World Tour. Maybe the Saudi stuff that he's been, you know, highly speculated with, maybe that's a little distraction and it might worry you. But when you get to Florida and the greens get a little flatter, it can benefit a Lee Westwood who hits the ball really well, doesn't necessarily putt quite as well. And that's also where a guy like Lucas Glover comes into play. He missed the cut at Pebble Beach, but he did come in 37th in Phoenix, 33rd at the Sony. I'm sorry, tied 5th at the Sony, 33rd at the American Express. There's been, not the last 2 weeks, but there's been some really nice off the tee play. There's been some really nice ball striking of late. And I think that could be a nice option as well. But my goodness, has the putting been bad?
Oh my God, it's horrendous, Greg. It's just
so bad.
So bad.
And again, maybe Florida helps. I've always thought that the West Coast swing demanded more out of the skill of putting than Florida. The greens in Florida get a little flatter. And I think you can see guys in this team no putt category have a little more success. And again, I mean, this is the theme with all of my guys here, because Hudson Swafford is much of the same. Since his win, he missed the cut at the Farmers, tied 60th in Phoenix, but his ball striking has still been really quite good. And he's been a regular gainer. He's been a loser in putting since his win, where he putted great. But I think there's still some real confidence going on with his full swing. And I think that could bode well for him this week. So he's played well here, well enough here in the past. A tied 21st finish, a couple of, you know, narrowly made cuts. But I like Hud Swafford this week too.
Swafford popped up for me as well. His shortcomings are kind of around the green, and he's at least can sometimes find a hot putter, which is what he did just a couple weeks ago to get that victory at the American Express. Producer Jacob putting in lots of good research here, because Sia mentioned this entire course is not the bear trap. Russell Knox is 7 under career at the bear trap, which is like bonkers good. Missed the cut here in 4 of the last 5 years. So, you know, is
playing him?
3 holes does not make a course, as they say. Will I play Russell Knox? Probably not.
He's the best in the bear trap.
That's true. If this was a 12 hole event in which they only played the bear trap, it'd be Russell Knox and Ricky Fowler. Those would be the guys that you'd want to play. Fowler's been awesome at it.
Yeah. He's aggressive.
He's aggressive. Yes. Okay, see, let me open this back up to you, because I kind of pigeonholed you into Ryan Palmer a little bit earlier here. Anybody else in this $7,000 range that has caught your interest?
There's a few guys that are interesting to me. One of them, I think, could be a little chalky. And if he is, I'm going to just pivot right off of him, because I think his upside is limited. And that is Chris Kirk at 7,500. His history here is okay. You know, a couple, you know, top 35 finishes, a couple missed cuts. But what I'm really interested in is how his game has sort of bounced back a little bit, too. Looking at the last 24 rounds, tee to green, off the tee, approach, it all looks quite good. And we see it up here if you're watching us on YouTube. I mean, you know, for Chris Kirk, these are pretty good metrics here. And in this field, I could absolutely see Chris Kirk maybe, you know, the T14 he had at the Phoenix Open. I think that kind of shows us that in this field, maybe he has top 10 upside the way he's been striking the ball. I think he's an interesting play. The only other two names, other than Ryan Palmer, who I do like a little bit, that I want to mention, a couple of young guys that just are making cuts. I mentioned this guy last week, maybe the week before too, Aaron Rye. I believe he's 7,400. Another guy that's making cuts and really striking the ball quite well. Again, the major metrics I'm looking at, the all-encompassing one, tee to green, off the tee approach, he's really checking all the boxes. And I think this is one of those guys, almost every show I kind of talk about a guy that I think is on the ascent. And I think Aaron Rye is certainly on the ascent. What I mean by that is I don't think these numbers stay where they are. I think this guy continues to rise. And in this field, I think it's a really good opportunity for Aaron Rye to make a name for himself. The only other guy I'll mention is the one right below him, another young gun who's been making a ton of cuts and really striking the ball well. If you look at his ball striking metrics over the last four or five tournaments, it's actually similar to Aaron Rye. He is really doing a good job off the tee on approach. And I think he's kind of a name that not a lot of people are really talking about or really looking at when they're looking at their DFS lineups. I think he has some potential.
And that name is Grayson Sigg for those not watching on YouTube. The other name that will be, I don't know, Sia, this is an interesting one. Nikolai Højgaard, who has won twice on the DP World Tour in his last seven or eight starts, kind of this 20-year-old, real talented guy who's coming over to play for the PGA Tour. He's only popular in like DFS Twitter, right? He's not going to actually be popular.
It's a great question, but I think you're right. I don't think he's going to get a ton of rostership. It's just going to be like the people who want to be able to say like during the weekend, like, oh yeah, I rostered Højgaard or Hogard's brother, Nikolai. So yeah, I mean, it's not a play for me probably. I don't love the 7K range, but at the same time, I think there are similar upside and safer options than Højgaard this week.
All right, let's bop on down to the $6,000 range. Adam Schenck, Bo Hosler, Charles Schwartzel are some of the names near the top. And at the bottom, my favorite part of the week, let's see.
Oh, by the way, Hank Lebioda made the cut at the bottom last week. I just wanted to point that out.
Oh, was he 6,000 or 6,100?
I thought he was 6K flat.
I think he might have been. I think he was. Well, yeah, I think he was as well. Michael Gligic, Canadian. Max McGreevy, Jim Knaus. Wow, even Sungjae No got the $100 bump. And Martin Trainer, they're out of the $6,000 range. They're now $6,100. They're on the come up. All right, Greg, what are we doing in this $6,000 range? How are we picking our assets down here?
Unfortunately, I feel like it's a lot of guessing.
Dart throw, is that the way?
Yeah, there's not much that I like here. Maybe these are all maybes. Okay, so up top, I think you could go with a maybe on a JJ Spahn. He seems to at least have been playing some pretty good golf of late.
And well-rounded golf, yeah.
Yeah, well-rounded, right? Nothing that's overly optimistic, but there's not a lot of deep red on his chart when you look at it. So that could be a potential. I mean, in four of his last five starts, rather three of his last four, he's got top 35s. So he's been playing... I at least feel like he's been playing pretty good. I don't feel like that about everybody here. Another guy in a right below him, again, 6,900 would be a Mark Hubbard. And then a Matthew Neesmith and a Patrick Rogers. They're kind of... Rogers is out. Never mind.
Rogers just might... He might lose a dozen golf balls.
He's out.
I like him. So talented. Oh boy. He might lose a dozen golf balls.
Yeah. There. I wouldn't be surprised. So he's out. I mean, a Doug Gim kind of makes sense off the top of your head. The numbers they're not where they were ball striking wise for him. So I don't love that. So I guess it's either the JJ Spahn, the Mark Hubbard. The next guy that I like would be maybe a Vaughn Taylor. And then I'd go down to our boy, Paul Barjon.
Yeah, I would definitely do Paul Barjon. I've got one name, Sia, but I'm not going to divulge it just yet. Where are you going in the $6,000 range?
This range is a little tougher than I thought it would be. I'm going to throw out a few names that I think have some potential to make the cut, and a couple names that I think maybe a little bit better than making the cut. So let me just run them off real quick. I do think Doug Gim is interesting. His history here is also poor. Even last year at this time, he was actually playing pretty well, and he was still, you know, missing the cut here. So, but I do think he's an interesting name with some upside. I think Smotherman is very interesting. I think he's been playing really well lately. I'm not going to not say Hank Leviota, Sir Hank. I think after seeing him last week, I don't know, maybe in this tournament, maybe this is an opportunity for him to kind of, you know, regain the momentum he had in the fall of last year. Satoshi Kodaira is down here. We always kind of like him when he's low priced in a field like this. Tyler Duncan, I think, is really interesting. I think he, you know, I know he rates out really well in terms of the metrics, as far as the metrics are concerned. And I definitely think in this field, this is the type of tournament where Tyler Duncan could make a name for himself on day one or day two and, and therefore survive the weekend.
A couple of those guys popped up for me, but we are still looking for the one name, and I'd love your guys' opinion on this. So how about this one? I can't believe I'm saying this. Padraig Harrington. So let's look at what old Paddy Harrington's been up to.
Love it.
Didn't play well on the senior tour last week, but hey, he got his kind of warm-up round in. Look at what he's done, Greg, on the DP World Tour for his last five. T27, T9, T20, T8, T12. That's some pretty good golf. I know it's a different tour. I know it's a different world, but do I need to remind anyone that he has won this event twice? Am I just grasping, or could Paddy Harrington make the cut for me this week?
You're not grasping in this range. It's a perfect event for him. I mean, think of what he did at the PGA Championship. It's not as long, which is good for him, but it's comparable to a degree. You don't have to make a lot of birdies. You got to play smart golf, and it's clear that he's got control of his golf ball with those finishes. When you're above 50 years old and you're competing with some of the best players in the world, whether it's on the DP World Tour or the PGA Tour, you're in control of your ball. You're not spraying it, and that's key this week. You have to stay under control. You can't hit it in the penalty areas, and he'll understand how to do that. So I mean, honestly, Rick, in this range, I go with him. I put as much trust in him as I would any of the names that I mentioned. So I'm all for it.
Yeah, I'm just scrolling and I'm like, Peter Uihlein, I don't know.
No. Or
Dylan Wu, I don't know. Like Brandon Hagee, boy, I don't know.
Hagee's not bad.
It's not a bad I mean, he's play. Just been he's played better here, but he's been horrible. We can do the Hagee stuff. I mean, I don't mind it, right? I mean, he's got a runner-up finish. I think he's got a 21st, maybe a 31st as well around here. But look at what he's done, Sia. Cut, 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 MDF, cut, cut. I mean, that's pretty hard to back.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. I'll give you another name. I mean, I apparently like all the young guys. I think Lee Hodges is interesting.
I thought guy Hodges playing was fine. Pretty well. Yeah, he's at least made a little bit of noise this season. He's made cuts. He's finished well. Here's his numbers. There's at least, you know, 50% green on his sheet here. T3 at the American Express, his best finish. Played well at the Korn Ferry Finals last year. He's a good player. So yeah. I think Hodges is probably the most reasonable name we've thrown out thus far.
I don't know. That range is tough. It makes me really like the not starting with the 9K. Honestly.
Yeah, dipping down to the sixes is not fun. It's really not fun.
No, I mean, you're going to probably get some of those guys making the cut, but it just, you don't feel like you're backing them with any confidence. And this event as a whole is so risky in general. And no matter what range you're in, there's really high miscut risk. So I don't know, maybe that pushes you to the 6K range, but I don't feel good when I have all six guys in my roster are high risk.
Yeah, well, that's
welcome to Tyler Duncan week, folks.
Oh boy.
I'm calling my shot.
Welcome to Tyler Duncan week. Okay, well, that'll do it for this DFS preview for this week's Honda Classic. You, the listeners, are now in the one and done. So look in the description. Get your pick in. We will announce it tomorrow on the Mega Preview Pod, and you'll be in the one and done just like the rest of us. Otherwise, we'll see you tomorrow, and then round by round recaps after each and every round. Greg Ducharme, he's right there. You can find him on Twitter at TheRealGFD, and you can find Sia Najad at Sia Najad. You can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time. We'll be right back.
everyone is talking about If.
I'm going to go on a limb here, but I like it. I love it.
It's original and heartfelt.
Ta-da!
And the must-see comedy of the summer that's perfect for the whole family.
This is just so exciting.
If. Rated PG. Now playing in theaters.